Welcome to the My Family Coach podcast. I'm Claire, and each week you'll find me interviewing a guest expert to find out more about the tricky world of child behaviour, all in handy 15-minute-ish bite-sized chunks. At the end of each episode, we'll send you away with three practical tips. It's perfect for parents, carers, and professionals working with children. And if this episode leaves you wanting more, you can watch, listen, and read our wide range of free resources on the My Family Coach website. I'm joined today by Georgina Durrant. Georgina is a former teacher, special educational needs coordinator and director of Cheshire SEN Tutor Limited. She founded the award-winning SEM resources blog. We'll put a link at the bottom of this episode to share activities, advice and recommendations for parents and teachers of children with special educational needs and disabilities. Not only is Georgina a podcast host, she is also an author, and her first book, 100 Ways Your Child Can Learn Through Play, was published in 2021. Her second book, How to Boost Reading and Writing Through Play, was published in November this year. And today, Georgina and I are talking about the impact of play on emotional regulation. Enjoy the episode. Hi, Georgina, how are you?
Hi, I'm really good, thank you. Thank you for inviting me on here.
No troubles. I'm actually very excited that you have a very quality microphone as well as a fellow podcaster. So it's nice to hear your lovely to hear tones through my computer today.
Oh, thank you. I must admit, I'm a little bit nervous being a guest rather than the host. It's much easier being the host of a podcast because you've got the edit button and the power, and I don't have that as the guest. So yeah.
I'm feeling really, really powerful and all-encompassing today. Although just to note to the content editor that it's not easy being the host, if we could just really reiterate that.
Yes, that's a very good point, isn't it? It's very time-consuming, very difficult job.
Well, it's so lovely to have you on the podcast today. I'm really excited about the topic. We have talked about play on the podcast before, but I think we're really going quite specific and we're thinking about how play can help emotional regulation in children. Just before we get like delving into the topic a bit, if you could just recommend a book on the topic, that'd be great.
I feel a bit daft doing this, and I'm going to completely blame my publishers for this and say that they would really, really want me to recommend my own book. So I'm really sorry if this comes across as very big headed, but I'm going to recommend my own book, which is 100 Ways Your Child Can Learn Through Play. I'm showing it on the screen, but there's no one can see it.
Well, apart from... I can see it, and that's important.
but basically, it's for parents and teachers of children with special educational needs, although it's suitable for all children in doing so. And it's basically, as the name suggests, lots of ways to develop really important skills through play. So things like emotional regulation, but also things like social skills, speech, language and communication, etc., all through playful activities where children won't even know that they're actually learning. They'll just be having fun, hopefully.
Well, we were talking about that off air. People get annoyed when I say that we talk off air, but we do sometimes talk off air. But the idea that learning is much broader than a curriculum or, you know, a set of academic targets, learning through play is super important, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it is how children learn, especially very young children. And I think people like to separate play and learning into two separate things. They're not two separate entities. They're actually the same thing. Play is learning. It's just a different way. And there's so many skills you can sort of weave into play. And I think free play in particular is really, really important. It doesn't always have to be set activities, but it can be children's play that they've designed themselves, that they're enjoying themselves. And we can just sort of bring along a bit of literacy or bring along a little bit of numeracy and sort of weave that into what they're doing without them realizing. And then they're just developing extra skills whilst they're playing. But they'll be developing skills themselves, like, you know, communication skills when they, I don't know, fall out over a dinosaur toy or, you know, fine motor skills when they drop the sequins on the floor and need to pick them all up. All of these skills are happening without us having to do anything. And I think we just need to be empowered and realize that, yeah, learning and play go together. They are the same thing.
They are one of the same. And I think it's frustrating, maybe as a practitioner or a parent carer, that those skills that you've mentioned are often referred to as soft skills. And that's a phrase that I find a bit difficult, because actually those soft skills aren't so soft. They're actually what we need in the world and what children need, adults need.
Absolutely. They're definitely not soft skills. I think, well, like our podcasting now with speech and language and communication skills, we need them. You know, you find motor skills to be able to write, to do your coat up in the morning. Like all of these things are completely necessary. They're not, they're definitely, in my opinion, not soft skills at all. And I think you need these foundations before you can do all the other stuff. So yeah, absolutely imperative to learning.
They are. And I'm thinking about learning about emotional regulation as well. And parents, carers, or professionals listening as well might wonder how play can help with emotional regulation. And actually, when I was reading your form, I'm quite experienced in working with SEN individuals and families that might have SEN children or children with special educational needs. And I was thinking, oh, I don't know. I'm not, I don't know a huge amount about it. So like, go for it. Tell us a bit more about how play helps with emotional regulation.
Yeah, so I think if you think about it from an adult point of view to start with, we do it without realizing. So say you're feeling really stressed, you've had a really hard day at work, or you've had a hard day looking after the kids, you're feeling like you want to pull your hair out and really, really stressed. If you're lucky enough to have the time, you might have a bath, which would be a wonderful sensory experience, wouldn't it? Or you might read a book, which is essentially imaginative play because you're going into another world, reading a book and thinking about whatever's on the pages. Or you might go for a run, which essentially is active play. You're going for a run and that might really help with your emotional regulation, and then you calm down. What play for children is exactly the same. So sensory play for a child who's feeling particularly overwhelmed can be hugely beneficial for them, because then they can chill out and relax and calm. So getting, if they're feeling stressed, getting the sandpit out, or getting, it doesn't have to be the sandpit, it could be anything that, you know, it could be water play, it could be something sensory that they can just concentrate just on one of their senses, on their sense of touch and feel, and then they can help themselves relax. It's just like having a bath. Or you could, if active play is more beneficial for them when they're feeling like that, getting them to run around and climb and jump and do all of those things will help them with their emotional regulation. Or you might get them to do some imaginative play. If escaping into a different world, like us reading a book, is really helpful for them, so they might want to play at cafes or play at being a postman or something like that. And I think it's trying to realize that we're not just doing it for in the moment. So yes, it'll be helpful if that child is feeling particularly overwhelmed and stressed. Maybe doing some sensory play could be really helpful right now to help them calm down. But by doing so, we're then giving them the tools for when they're older, so they can then help to regulate their own emotions as they're a teenager or as they're an adult. And that's just going to be really healthy for them emotionally and for their well-being, isn't it? Because then they'll associate, I don't know, going for a run and playing outside with feeling calm. And then that's such a healthy habit when you're getting older, to know that if I go for a run after work, I'm going to feel a lot better about things.
That's really interesting, because I was thinking, I was like, I do quite a lot of the things that you said. In fact, I wasn't feeling that great this morning, so I just sort of jumped in the bath to, you know, just to relax a bit. And then I often go for runs to regulate myself, and I don't run quickly or anything. It's just being out in nature. But when you were saying all that, I was like, I don't know how I know that. Like, I don't know where I've learned that from. And it's interesting to map it back to those experiences as a child and how that journey helps us to regulate as adults. That's really interesting.
Yeah, and I think especially for children that might not have made the link, it's really important that we do help them build that link early on, and make them, and not, you know, not, we don't have to specifically say to them, this is helping you calm down, but they'll realize, you know, they'll positively associate it with feeling calmer, won't they? So if they realize when they're feeling stressed, and then you've sat down and you've done some lovely water play together, and then suddenly they're feeling happy, they might associate water and splashing about with feeling calm. You never know, they might become a swimmer when they're older, or they, you know, that sort of relaxation and associating sensory play or active play or whatever with feeling calm can only benefit them when they get older, and whilst the kids as well.
Yeah, so the idea really that those experiences not only help them in the future, but will help them in the here and now to regulate themselves better.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking about a parent carer though, that like might have tried a few of those things, and they've tried quite a few bits of play, but I guess troubleshooting it doesn't seem to be helping an individual, or maybe like using water play is causing them to escalate in things. Is there anything, yeah, that you can think of around troubleshooting that kind of thing?
I think just keep trying, be led by the child. Children often know, they're the experts of themselves, aren't they? And they often know ways that can help themselves feel calmer. So I'd be sort of led by their interests and what they seem to do. So when, yeah, follow their interests, follow what they're doing, but keep trying different things. My book, and I'm sorry to slip it in again,
no,
my book's got 100 ways in there, so there is something for everyone. And I always stress that there's not not every activity is going to be suitable for every child, because I don't have your child sat in front of me. I don't know every child. There's no way I could possibly have made every activity suitable for everyone. So yeah, I think just trying loads of different activities, trying different things. And if it doesn't work, don't be offended and don't be upset and disappointed. Just try something different and eventually you'll find something that works for them, I'm sure.
Yeah, I know. I do quite a bit of intervention work, working with children on the autistic spectrum or autistic children. And I do lots of play-based things based on the things that they enjoy and they like, and what works for one individual definitely wouldn't work for another. But also I've noticed that sometimes when I'm playing, I really hope the head teacher isn't listening and knowing that I'm just playing, because that's really what we do. But when I'm playing with that child, I really zone into the things that they're saying. So it is truly led by them, rather than having like this, you know, box of like plasticine or whatever. And I really want it to be led by the individual. And I found it's much more successful, that exploration, when it is truly led by that individual. And it's not me having like an agenda of, right, this play is going to be like this. Because I think as practitioners and as parents, carers, I mean, with my nieces, nephews, I would definitely control all of the play massively. We're going to do this, and then we're going to do this, and then we're going to do this. It's the teacher in me, right? But actually, that free play that you mentioned, being led by the child, it is really important, because taking away that sense of control, maybe too many demands, that doesn't help with emotional regulation.
Yeah, definitely. And I also like to think of, if you're doing play-based sort of activities, try and think of it like a recipe. So if you were getting like a recipe book out to cook some cupcakes with your kids, for example, and you've got the recipe book on the kitchen table and you're thinking, right, let's do this one here. But it says in there that the sultanas in there, and you're thinking, well, my kid doesn't like sultanas. You're not going to put the sultanas in the cake and just, you know, okay, they won't like it. You're going to take the sultanas out of the recipe, aren't you, and put something different, maybe some chocolate chips or something like that, that they'd like. And I think it needs to be the same with play-based activities. Yes, you might see this fantastic thing that you want to do with the kids, but you've got to change it so that it suits the child sat in front of you, because there's no point just plowing ahead with a plan that looks lovely on Pinterest or Instagram or whatever, that isn't fit for your child, because they won't like it and they're not going to get anything out of it. So yeah, I would just say use it like a recipe book.
Oh, I like that metaphor. I like that idea. It reminds me of a French and Saunders sketch from years and years ago, where there's two parents really taking over. They're making like dinosaur biscuits and they're like, no, you're doing it wrong, you need to do it like this. And by the end of the sketch, it's just the parents actually making the dinosaur biscuits, because they planned it in their head of how they want it to be. But it's quite easy to do that, right, isn't it?
Very easy. I've been there, definitely, where you do it yourself and then you like, the kids have walked off and you're there sat baking, like you say, you're like, oh, this was supposed to be for them.
I know, but I'm having a lovely time. That's good as well. But yeah, cooking is really playful. So that's really interesting. So I guess we're thinking about it being really child-led, and it's okay to have a bit of a plan, isn't it? But actually be a bit flexible, really, with what we want to achieve.
Yeah, and I think having a plan can be useful for some children as well, particularly some with special educational needs and disabilities, because play doesn't always come easy to all children. And I think that's a difficult concept to get hold of, because you always imagine all children find play easy, and sometimes not all children do. And I think giving them some structure to play and some plans for play can actually be really helpful. I find for kids who find perhaps like lunchtime at school really difficult, you know, when you go into the big playground and you've had a really structured day. So you might have had, you know, maths in the morning, then you've had a bit of English, then you've had, and then suddenly after lunch, you're out into the playgrounds and you've no idea what you've got to do, because there's no structure and no plan. And that can be really hard for some kids, because what do you do? No one's telling you the order of what you should be doing. And I think having sort of, if you're doing play-based activities at home with those children, you're giving them some ideas. So then at lunchtime, they can be like, ah, we did that activity, I could suggest that to so-and-so and we've got a plan. And it can actually help with kids' social skills then, because they've got some ideas that you've taught them. And I don't think it's, don't be afraid to realize that some kids don't always know naturally how to play or have ideas for play. And you can model these and help kids develop these.
Yeah, because in my head, I'm really visual. I'm imagining that as like scaffolding that that we're building at home. So we're building scaffolding foundations for play. And then what we're hoping is that transference happens where we've got that kind of mechanism in place, that structure in place, so it doesn't all fall down at lunchtime, because it can be really, really difficult, that unstructured time. I know I was working in a pupil referral unit, and I had only three boys in the class. Doesn't sound like many, and I was really inexperienced. And I think it was the last lesson before Christmas, and I was like, "Cool, let's just play, you know, let's just go." No structure. Honestly, Georgina, it was the worst. It was only 45 minutes of my life that I'm exaggerating, but I felt like I was having to like peel them off the ceiling because that unstructured play was absolutely foreign to them, but also just completely unachievable. They didn't enjoy it. They started arguing, like, you know, all these types of things. And it was such a hard lesson to learn as a really inexperienced practitioner about play and the functions of play. I needed to do is all the things that you've just said, just have a few things set up, a little basic structure, that foundation, so the house didn't fall down. And but you learn the hard way sometimes, don't you?
Absolutely. That sounds really difficult. I can imagine it, though. I was there with you in the classroom in my head. And it sounded really hard.
So I guess thinking about the functions of play, emotional regulation, we talked a little bit about sensory play and those different things that can help children and parents and carers. What other types of play are there? I know that sounds like a ridiculous question, but I'm just thinking like sensory is there for me, but how else can we broaden that out?
Yeah, so there's loads of different types of play, isn't there? So you've got imaginative play, like I was saying, going into escaping into another world can be hugely relaxing for children. So if you're playing pretend, that can be really, really fun, especially, I don't know, you can play with animals, you know, pretend animals, you can play with your soft toys, you can play with little models, all of that sort of stuff can be really nice for emotional regulation because you're able to escape from whatever's stressing you out. It's a bit like us watching a film, I suppose, or reading a book, like I said, and you sort of then able to escape to a different world and relax doing that. Active play, like we said, with the running. So being able to, escape from your feelings and all of that sort of stress by being able to be really, really active. You've also got things like craft. Craft, I think people think as a separate entity as well and not actually being play, but craft is play in my book. People might disagree with me, but I've got a whole chapter in my book called Crafty Play, so it better be. But yeah, craft can be another relaxing thing. And again, you know, people like my mum will sew as something to do when she's feeling stressed and wanting to relax. And it's the same thing, isn't it? It's just another way of regulating your emotion. Play, all types of play can help children to regulate their emotions because it's helping them to relax and have fun and connect with other people sometimes, or not always. Sometimes they can enjoy playing by themselves, or they might want to play with somebody else. But that connection can be hugely beneficial for emotional regulation. But also that pressure, just thinking about connection, that pressure to play with other people. I think one thing that can be difficult as well is accepting that not all children do want to play with other children all the time, and that's okay. If a child does want to play by themselves, again, that's equally okay, and it's not something to stress about.
I was thinking about connections and thinking a little bit about COVID, and I was working in a mainstream high school during COVID, and we had the key worker children in, and during that time the lessons were much more practical, and they had, I can't remember what the lesson was called, but basically it was crafts. And watching children that were there, I think they were year seven, so about 11 years old, making friendship bands for each other with wool, and the kind of concentration, but also like the connections. Like, it was really interesting that you said that, because I remember really vividly them being like, "Oh, pass me that bit of wool. Oh, okay. Oh, that's really nice," and praising each other. But honestly, if you put them all in a English lesson together when maybe it wasn't as engaging as it could have been, or it was a lot of sat down, that connection and that getting on together was really different. So it was really interesting that you said that, the power of being focused and calm in an activity.
Yeah, and I suppose that shared enjoyment of something together as well, isn't it? That connection that you can talk about what you're doing, you can explain how you're enjoying it, and you're all feeling calm together can be, Yeah, a really nice experience. That sounds lovely activity, by the way, making friendship bracelets together and sitting together.
Oh, it was so lovely. And that's one thing I learned in Girl Guides for about the week that I went, was how to make a friendship bracelet. And then now, when I worked in a mental health hospital with some of the young women that I worked with eating disorders, I primarily worked with, we did quite a few activities, particularly in the summer, of craft-based things, friendship bracelets, because it's that idea of connecting with others though as well. It's something that you give, you might receive one, and yeah, it served me really well, that one week in Girl Guides.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I think it's hard when you're focusing so much on academics at the moment as well, to then look at something like making a friendship bracelet and realize how many skills children are developing whilst doing it. So in my book at the bottom, both my books at the bottom, I've got a tick box, like a section of tick boxes, and it shows for each activity all the different things that a child might be developing whilst they're doing it. So it goes through like speech, language and communication, literacy and numeracy, gross motor skills, fine motor skills, etc., and ticks off which ones, because I think a lot of the time parents can feel sort of guilty that the children are just playing, like they're just making that friendship bracelet, they're not really doing anything, when actually they are doing so much and they're learning like a whole range of skills, like emotional regulation, like we said, but also they'll have been developing fine motor skills, won't they, when they're fiddling around with the wall and putting it all together, which then will help with learning to write and being able to hold a pen comfortably. They'll be developing concentration skills, being able to sit there for a period of time and focus on one task. They might be developing social skills from chatting to somebody else. And like you were saying, can I borrow the wall from you? Or have you got the pink? Or has anyone got a band to tie it, or whatever they need it? They're developing those skills as well. And I think that's so important to realise, that play is much more than just playing. They are developing so much whilst they're doing it. And it's just up to us to sort of weave more skills into it and just be empowered to realize that actually your children are doing great and they're learning loads. You did a brilliant job.
If you could just finish off with just a quick summary, three tips, that'd be great.
Yeah, so I think my three tips would be, free play is the most important. So yes, I've written two books about play-based activities, but actually children's own play, their idea of how they want to play, is the most important thing. And be guided by their likes and dislikes and sort of weave these skills into their play. So for example, if you wanted to develop some literacy and numeracy skills, you could, and they're really into dinosaurs, get them making a dinosaur museum and then make some little signs or posters and all of that sort of thing to develop all of some extra skills whilst they're playing. Don't stress too much about catching up academically. I'd focus more on play and mental health and well-being and that side of things. And give children the tools for emotional regulation through play. So thinking about what we were saying about sensory play being like us taking a bath to relax and that side of things, or active play and running around can be another way to regulate their emotions.
But thank you so much for your time today. It's been really, really interesting. I've taken away a few bits for me to think about and reminded myself of the power of friendship bracelets, which I'm sure we should all remind ourselves of. I really hope to catch up with you soon.
Yeah, thank you ever so much. Really enjoyed chatting to you.
You've been listening to the My Family Coach podcast. Thank you for joining us as we lift the lid on the challenging world of child behaviour. Remember to subscribe to listen to all our episodes, and there's heaps more helpful support for all your parenting needs on the My Family Coach website. Thanks again, and I'll see you next time.